Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, here's a trivia question to start off this half hour. What notable Iowa structure, used until very recently, by the way, predates Iowa statehood in the 1840s? Perhaps there is more than one correct answer, but one right answer for certain would be what's known as the Fort in Fort Madison. The old penitentiary, of course. My guest this half hour is Dan Minette. He's director of a new documentary film about it called The Fort, 177 Years of Crime and Punishment at the Iowa State Penitentiary. Dan joins me now by phone. Hi, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is a wonderful film. I watched it in its entirety last night and thoroughly enjoyed it. Those who love the films, the historical films of Ken Burns, will certainly love this film as well. It's stylistically very similar. Can you start off with the time and circumstances when the prison was first built and opened? It was initially called the Iowa Territorial Prison in 1839, right?
That's right. And this was, I believe, 9 years before statehood, when Iowa had just been peeled off from the Wisconsin territory. And when, back in the old days, when they formed a territory, the first thing you needed was a legislature, some schools, and a prison. And so the legislature, which then was in Burlington, one of three sites for the legislature historically, had a debate about where to put the prison. And a group of citizens from Fort Madison, which of course had been the original American settlement, going back to the old fort in 1808, which had been ordered constructed by then territorial governor of the Louisiana Territory, no less than Meriwether Lewis, they said that they should have dibs on what was going to be the first lucrative public works project in the territory of Iowa. So 1839, it was the project was begun in what was originally just a warden's house, and the prisoners were kept in the basement. And the warden would bring them up during the day, and they would work and raise their food, and at nighttime they'd be shackled down in the basement. Also interesting, by the way, since you mentioned Ken Burns, 1839 was also the year that photography was invented. And although we don't have photographs from 1839, there are photographs going back to the mid-1800s in this film. There are really some amazing photographs of the penitentiary as far back as the 1870s, and many glass plate negatives, which are some of those very early and style photographs, stereographs from the State Historical Society of Iowa, where the prisoners and the institution really speak to us from 150 years ago. And I think in addition to the inmates of today who speak to us directly, some of the faces from the prisoners 150 years ago speak to us because of just some remarkable photographs, really at what was still the infancy of photography.
Right, and that's so important to see these faces. You describe how the prison population has changed, but also having also been journalistically as a visitor to the Iowa State Penitentiary, the old fort, Dan, it was interesting to see the type of people that first inhabited it, and also surprising to hear that prisoners had a hand in building parts of it.
Absolutely. You know, one might say that part of the cruelty of the prison sentence was not only did they send these guys to this prison, but they said, okay, now you're here, you get to build the walls that are going to imprison you. So one of the photos that I find most stunning is in the film is a photo of what has to be, you know, several hundred inmates marching shoulder to shoulder with buckets of mortar as they take stones and mortar to build the 30-foot walls that were going to imprison them. So, you know, this is back in the days where you're not going to bring outside contractors in to build a prison. They had no budget for building prisons. The prisoners were going to build their own prison. Not sure if that's the smartest thing security-wise, but in any case, the prisoners were, in fact, the masons who quarried the stone. In some cases, they hauled the stones across the frozen Mississippi River. The old fort literally is right on the Mississippi River there in Fort Madison. They hauled it with mules up the hillside, and then they lay them one on top of the other until they were 30 foot high. Mm-hmm. Covering something like 60 acres or so. So
later in the film, Dan, it's very interesting. You talk about how when moving to the new facility just a couple of years ago, some prisoners lamented the fact that they didn't have the wall because they didn't want to see what they were missing, so to speak, and others yearned to see the horizon and not just this wall, this 30-foot high wall.
That's right. At the very end of the film, there's a split in opinion between the old-timers. Some like to, in the new Iowa State Penitentiary, there is a fence, an electrified fence that would shock prisoners if they actually got that far. There's an initial fence that would stop them. If they actually somehow got through that, then there's an electrified fence.
Mm-hmm.
But they can see through it. They can see traffic. They can see birds. They can see people going on nearby farms. And some people say they actually enjoy that. They can at least see the world around them. But one inmate says that it's torture to see the outside world, and that he really doesn't like to be able to see through the fence. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to remind those who perhaps just joined us, Dan Manette is with us, director of the new film, The Fort, 177 Years of Crime and Punishment at the Iowa State Penitentiary. I wanted to get into a few clips I wanted to play, but one... You went to an old WOI TV documentary from 1953, and I wanted to play some of this because when I saw it and I heard what the journalist here was asking, it gave me a double take. I didn't know. This is a question that I guess reflects how our view of the role of prison has evolved over time. Let's listen to this this excerpt from a WOI documentary that is included in your film, Dan.
Warden Lainson is here with me tonight, and I'd like for you to meet him, and let's ask him some questions. Mr. Lainson, it seems to me that these prisoners are pretty well treated over there. I was under the impression that men were sent to prison for punishment.
No, men are not sent to prison for punishment. They're sent to prison as punishment.
You mean just their very presence there is all the punishment that's required?
About all the punishment that you can give any man is to deprive him of his liberty and his freedom. And they probably understand that better than anybody else in the world.
Dan, you picked it for that reason, for a different reason. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Well, and then what's also remarkable is the clip in the movie right after that, and that is the warden, Nick Ludwick, who recently retired, having not seen that documentary, in our interviews, said the exact same thing. He was sort of giving us a history of prisons in America and said, you know, back in the 1800s, it was all about silence and balls and chains and wearing striped uniforms, which, by the way, is exactly what it was like when it was the Iowa Territorial Prison in the 1800s. But that eventually there was a realization that, hey, if you're going to turn these guys back out into society, if you want to rehabilitate these guys, and by the way, if you don't want them to act like, you know, animals and attack guards while they are in prison, you should probably shouldn't treat them like animals. And that gets echoed a couple times in the film. One of the head of the, basically the prison SWAT team, Doug Bolton, talks about how even the prison SWAT team, despite the fact that they have all the weapons and so forth for emergencies, their highest tactic, most important tactic, is de-escalation, because that's always going to be safest for everybody involved. And in an era where there's a lot of concern about violence when it comes to the interaction of civilians and law enforcement, it was very impressive to hear this progressive tactic and message of de-escalation and rehabilitation pushed by the Iowa Penitentiary warden and personnel going back 60 years and reiterated today.
Mm-hmm. You talk about one of the chapters we can't talk about in depth, the riot that happened in 1981. You interviewed a hostage, Rich Barlow, who was on his fourth day in training there. There were repercussions to that riot. But tell us about one of the inmates you focus on. You have several interviews here, but your main focus is the longest-serving offender in Iowa. He's the fifth longest-serving inmate in the nation, according to your information, Jack Nutter. Tell us briefly, how did he get imprisoned?
Jack Nutter was in a number of juvenile facilities in Illinois when he was a teenager. In 1956, at the age of 18, he and another teenager and two teenage girls went on an old-fashioned joyride. They stole a car, and with the goal of getting to California, and they were going to steal gas at filling stations, as they were called in the old days. They weren't doing it with armed robbery. They were just going to, I think back in those days, you could just steal at the pump and not pay. They got caught in, I believe it was Independence, Iowa, and were booked at the local jail. Jack managed to escape through a window, and a manhunt was staged. And at that point, he was cornered by a policeman. And in the scuffle, Jack grabbed the policeman's gun, shot him, and the policeman died. So he was then charged with murder of the police officer. His court-appointed attorney urged him to plead guilty in hopes of getting, his attorney told him that would get him the lesser degree of life in prison rather than the death penalty, which Iowa still had back in the 50s. And at the before the judge accepted the guilty plea, but then he banged the gavel and said that he was delivering the sentence of the death penalty, and that sentenced Jack to death by hanging. So then, after some appeals were unsuccessful, in 1957, Nutter's death sentence was commuted to life by the governor, and he has been in jail ever since.
Mm-hmm. 60 years in jail. You have several.
Almost 62.
And it's interesting to see him talk about what has been his home, I guess you'd say, for over 60 years. Let's talk about Iowa's death penalty, which was ended in the 1960s. Here's an excerpt from your film. This is a reading of a book by a Professor Haas, is it, about the process of the execution?
That's right.
Okay, let's listen to this excerpt. And this is how an execution would have been carried out in Iowa prior to the abolishment of the death penalty.
About 30 minutes before the execution, the condemned would dress in suit and tie, bid farewell to any last visitors, and walk to the nearby gallows. A platform built about 8 feet off the ground with a wooden arm overhanging it. A trapdoor beneath the arm. The condemned man would be positioned over the trapdoor. His legs would be bound together with a leather belt. His arms would be pinned to his sides with another belt. The black hood would be fitted over his head. The noose would be adjusted around his neck. It's not behind his ear. One of the prison officials would signal always ready.
Ready!
The sheriff would pull the lever.
An excerpt from The Fort, 177 Years of Crime and Punishment at the Iowa State Penitentiary. The director, my guest this half hour, Dan Manette. I want you to tell us how the death penalty ended in Iowa. But first of all, I wanted to play a clip from the publication produced by inmates, written by inmates, Presidio. Before I play that little clip, The Last Mile, tell us what Presidio is.
Presidio was a magazine written and edited by the inmates of the Iowa State Penitentiary. They actually followed the lead, I should say, from Minnesota. The penitentiary there, the prisoners launched what was the first prison-edited magazine in America. But for several decades, the Presidio was award-winning, and it actually produced its editor, Tom Runyon, wrote a memoir that shot up the bestseller list, and I highly commend it to your listeners, In for Life. You can find it on Amazon still. It is just a remarkable piece of journalism. A guy, bank robber from the Depression, and he at one point escaped and made it to Fort Dodge, but just a remarkable account of life as a prisoner. But the Presidio really was an incredible magazine, photojournalism. Another member of the board was a photographer who did a book of photographs that was excerpted in Life magazine. Robert Neese, he did a book called Prison Exposures. It covered topics including, of all things, gay marriage in prison, and this is back in the 1950s and 60s. So the Presidio was just absolutely remarkable.
Let's hear this excerpt before our time runs out, Dan. The Last Mile, give us some context for this reading we're going to hear.
Sure. When this actually was in direct response to Jack Nutter being in prison and being on death row, as well as a few others. A number of the writers, including this Tom Runyon I mentioned, would editorialize against the parole policies, as well as as capital punishment. So this particular one took square aim at the death penalty and in very powerful terms urged the abolishment of the death penalty in Iowa.
Okay, let's listen to this reading from The Fort, Dan Manette's new film, documentary.
This is the last mile for the man convicted of a capital crime and about to pay with his life. 18 steps lead to the gallows and to the death of a human being. 15 of those steps are wood. 3 steps were built of man's life and habits. The final step is the law that decrees that man must kill man, and eye for an eye. The law itself tries to teach others the value of life by casually destroying life, thus thwarting its avowed purpose.
That from The Fort, Dan Manette is our guest for the next few minutes. Finish up the story. How did Iowa's death penalty become abolished, Dan?
Well, interestingly, Governor Harold Hughes, who commuted Jack Nutter's sentence, was an advocate, as well as a number of others, for doing away with the death penalty. A number of Midwestern states either did away with it in the 20th century or never had it. Michigan never had it. The first territorial governor of Iowa, Governor Lucas, was a committed Methodist, did not believe in it. And so there was a strong streak from the religious community opposing it. Pressure built. The final execution in Iowa involved actually a federal prisoner. The governor appealed all the way to President Kennedy, asking that President Kennedy commute the sentence. And there's even an audio recording of that I'm going to be posting. Mm-hmm. It's not in the film, but I'm going to be posting on the website. JFK did not commute that sentence. And
quickly, we've got about a minute left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So finally, pressure mounted, and Iowa in 1965, the legislature finally voted to do away with the death sentence. Harold Hughes signed it. And so now it's been 52 years without the death sentence in Iowa.
In the final moment here, Dan, tell us, in making this documentary film, what did it tell you about how we punish those who disobey the law, how that's changed? Anything surprise you, a reflection there that you came away with above all?
Well, Iowa has a progressive tradition at the Iowa State Penitentiary when you hear what these old wardens say echoed today. I think a number of the wardens have a concern about some of the three strikes laws and mandatory minimums. And I think the recent law that Governor Branstad signed made go away to reform that as far as reducing sentences for drug crimes, petty burglaries, and so forth. So I think Iowa's definitely true to its progressive prairie roots on that. It has a ways to go. Perhaps in criminal justice reform is obviously a hot topic, but
yes,
I think people can be proud.
Dan Manette, thank you so much. The Fort, he's the director of The Fort, 177 years of crime and punishment at the Iowa State Penitentiary. Quickly, how can people see this?
Its DVDs will be available through thefort.film. It's going to get its broadcast premiere on WQPT PBS Quad Cities. Hopefully down the road, we will also be on Iowa Public Television.
So much here, Dan, that we didn't get to cover. The escape in 2004 under, then Governor Chet Culver that led to the new penitentiary. That story there, the riot, as I mentioned, in 1981. Hope we can all check this out. The Fort. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton, with help today from Robbie Broad. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Tomorrow, it's a NewsBuzz edition of our program. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.